Get smoother, brighter skin instantly in one easy step. Dermalogica's Daily Microfoliant gives you the smooth, glowy skin you want without damaging your skin barrier. This gentle exfoliating powder activates with water to smooth out rough texture and brighten skin. It's powerful enough to deliver results, yet gentle enough to use every single day, even on sensitive skin. See the results for yourself. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at cart for an exclusive free gift with $65 purchase.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why fans. It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to
building a life. For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone! Passes does it again. It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back! It's gone! Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
All right, play Tessie. I'm heartbroken right now, and it's just the culmination of months and months and months of watching every game, talking about it, thinking about it every day, going back to spring training, before spring training, like the off season. We do this podcast 3 days a week in the off season, and we grind and grind. You grind and grind. You watch all the games. You listen to the shows. You can't get enough Red Sox baseball. We can't get enough Red Sox baseball. And easily, without fail, every single year, the hardest day of the year for me is the day that the Red Sox play their last game. And some years it's harder than others. A year like this, where they make the playoffs for the first time in 4 years, they take a 1-0 series lead on the Yankees. We all get our hopes super high for a chance maybe at the ALDS to knock out the Yankees yet again. And in the blink of an eye, you know, in a 27-hour span or something like that, it comes crashing down and it just ends in the blink of an eye. And, you know, there are years like the last few years. You know, last year was our first full year doing the show. We grinded last year too. But like the season ended in like end of August, early September. And, you know, we just kind of had the last month to wind it down, kind of get through the last month so we can get to the off season, so we can get to the meat and potatoes. But like right now, the last thing I want is an off season. I want to watch more Red Sox baseball, and it just crushes me that we just don't get another game. 6 months till we get another meaningful game, and you know, this season had so much optimism going in, and the Red Sox actually made moves. They tried for the first time in forever, got off to a weird start with the Devers thing. I mean, that drama just didn't go away, and they got off to a weird start. And then right as they were kind of starting to turn around, they traded him, and they took a dip, and it kind of looked like it was going to be another one of those years, but they fought and they fought and they fought. Roman Anthony broke out. A lot of guys broke out. This was a big step in the right direction season at the bare minimum. And they got to the playoffs despite a shit ton of injuries. Like, this team could have easily rolled over and died in September, and they didn't. And they got there. And, you know, I will always appreciate that they were able to do that. They were able to stop the trend of this team missing the playoffs. Them getting there this year mattered. It meant something. But that said, the way they played these last two games, the season ending as abruptly as it did, the way you feel tonight is not changed in the slightest by the fact that this season was a step in the right direction. The Red Sox just got eliminated in a winner-take-all game by the New York Yankees. I am crushed. I'm sure you listening to this podcast feel the same or similarly. I'm just crushed.
Yeah, it sucks. The way that this season ended for a team that fought all year long, for them to just kind of go out like that without much of a fight, it's painful. I agree. The future is super bright. We all can, you know, talk about that later on, but right now it's, you lost to the Yankees. That's never good. I know you were banged up and the odds were stacked against you if you're a Red Sox fan, but it doesn't change the fact of what happened. For me personally, it's kind of tough. Like, I'm not a big football, basketball, or hockey guy. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do. That's the biggest thing for me when baseball season ends. I don't know what to, like, do with myself. Like, maybe I'll become a reader or, like, sew or something, but I don't know. That's for me, that's the toughest mental hurdle. But this show's not about me. It's about the Red Sox. Just painful, man. It felt like a slow, painful death. Am Schlittler, just unbelievable. That guy's going to be my sleep paralysis demon for months. Sad. This isn't how I wanted them to go out. I wanted it to be, if they were to lose, I wanted it to be a fight to the end. Something close where you can say they were so close. That was so painful because it was close. This is just painful because, I don't know, these moments are fleeting, and that just felt like one that did not seize, not at all, but it, not to their full potential. And I'm sure we'll get into the game itself, game three, but yeah, if you feel pain, that's normal, man. I mean, we should all be sad as Red Sox fans. It sucks, and I'm not going to sleep well probably for a few days. I'm sure there's other people who are insane like me and you too, who probably won't feel great for the next few days either. So, but this is part of the circle of life. I'd much rather feel this pain right now than, you know, feel like the season was over 2 months ago. And this is the pain that comes with me that gets to the playoffs. So it is what it is.
Yeah. I mean, in a rearview mirror, considering everything that happened this year, I mean, you go all the way back to Cutter, Hauk, Tristan, Giolito, Roman, Marcelo, Dobbins, Fitz, Hicks, Hendrick. Like, there's so much that went on this year. Trading Devers, obviously. They were always, like, I get the whole, like, preseason, like, people picked them to go super far. We all did, too. But no one saw, like, that magnitude of injury, roster, shuffling. No one saw any of that coming. So, like, they were always, I hate the term scrappy underdog, but, like, and especially where they played so well. But not that the cards were stacked against them, but you definitely didn't feel as confident as you would if you had, you know, Roman, Marcelo, those guys. Game one was awesome. Game two was kind of a gut punch. You kind of gave it away. And then game three, you just got absolutely pantsed by the local kid. Just so flat. Just the most abysmal way to go out. I mean, yeah, it's the end of another season. My big thing, and Sammy kind of said it a little bit, but like my big thing is I am a really big Pats, Bruins, and Celtics fan. Like I'll watch every single Pats game for sure, and then like 80% of Bruins and Celtics. But like there's just something so different with those sports than baseball. Like baseball, it's a daily grind. There's 162 of them. You just feel it more just because there's so much more exposure to it if you are a diehard fan. You feel it a lot more when shit doesn't go your way, especially on a night like tonight where you're bounced by the Yankees and like I said, you just get absolutely embarrassed. You feel it more just because you're around this team more. The other teams, you know, play 82, 100 of the 100 with the postseason. Patriots obviously play way less, but like there's just something so different about baseball when the season ends and how it ends and why it feels so different. I mean, you're with these guys for 6 months, 162 days over 6 months. 6 months is 185 days, give or take, with the end of March starting. So, I mean, more days than not, you're with these guys, watching these guys, living and breathing every pitch. And it absolutely fucking blows when a season ends. Albeit, Sammy said it, I would tenfold take this feeling right now over losing game 162, going 79-83. Like, that's what makes it worth it. Because when you finally get the payoff of that 162 grind, it makes it that much sweeter. But, I mean, until then, it sucks, man.
It's like the loved and lost or never love at all quote.
Yeah.
Like, we had so many awesome moments this year. And it was such a great feeling to see them get back to the postseason. And I wouldn't trade that to have had an easier end than what this is. But the truth is, because of the abruptness of exiting in the postseason in a game where had you won it, you're guaranteed at minimum three more games and a new opponent, a new series, new anticipation. And now it's like, you know, every single day as a diehard baseball fan, someone who's going to watch every single game, you wake up every single day from before April now to this point expecting there to be a game. And it's weird when there isn't a game. It's like there's an off day or a rainout, and those are rare. Like usually there's a game. And for that to just get abruptly stripped from you, like it is when you get eliminated from the postseason with so much emptiness because you wanted to see so much more and you're just not going to get it. And to sit here and to realize that you're not going to get it for six more months, like that is what makes it so hard, is just the emptiness of not having it as someone who relies on it every single day.
Yep. And it's a privilege to be able to wake up this morning and feel tons of anxiety all day long. Me, like, you can hear me right now. I'm sick. I'm coming down with something. I felt it like last night as the game was ending, and all day I'm like, oh my God, I feel like I'm getting sick. My world is crashing. Oh my God, the game. And like, I didn't even think about being sick for the entire game. And that's a privilege because I was just so stressed and I miss that feeling. Like, this sucks right now. Don't get me wrong. I'm not being the like, oh, well, that's baseball. It happens. Like, I'm not in a good way, but in a weird way, like, I missed the pain of a loss like this and like the anxiety leading up to it and ending a season being like, all right back here next year. Let's go. But fuck, it's just hard to be positive when you just like all the could have beens in these last two games. It's not just tonight. Even more so, you could say game two, there were more could have beens. Like, why didn't X happen? Why didn't this happen? And, you know, we already went over everything that happened last night, but tonight it's just like, ugh, I want to be positive. I can't. I am physically not possible.
The closest thing I think I can compare it to, I think I've definitely told this story on the podcast. I absolutely 100% have. It's how when I was a kid, and I mean like a kid, like I was like 6, 7, 8 years old, on every Christmas Eve for like 5 years. I just threw up because I was so excited for Santa. The equivalent to that as an adult is like waiting for the night to come around for a playoff baseball game. Like that, like good anxiety, like that good, like so excited, I just want to die feeling. That is the equivalent of me throwing up on Christmas is going through a work day for a playoff baseball game. Like there's nothing like it. And as much as this fucking sucks, as much as the second they went up 4-0, you just had a pretty good hunch nothing was going to happen. But like you still watch it because like that's what you look forward to. Because if they had come back and won 5-4, like that, you're top of the world. There is nothing, everyone, every media outlet in Boston, every radio station, whatever it is, there is nothing like Boston with playoff baseball. It didn't fall our way this year, and it sucks ass. This feeling is awful. I hate this feeling. I forgot what this feeling felt like. I would do it every single year for it to eventually pay off.
Thank you, Pat. I needed that. It's the only thing that's made me laugh for the last like 3 hours was thinking of fat Pat throwing up just on Christmas.
Fat piece of shit just blowing up hot dogs.
Thank you. Thank you. You cured my sickness.
Welcome. You're welcome.
I don't even like with the game itself.
There's like, not much to talk about. Cam Schindler pants them and butt fucked them.
Yeah. I mean, I was hearing I was talking a lot about Cam Schindler with some people that knew him, and I was just trying to like, I don't know. I like geared up like some hatred for this dude before the start. And I was really excited to see the Red Sox kick his ass today. I was excited about the possibility of it being him. Connelly Early, just a great dude, easy dude to root for. And honestly, he pitched really well today, including the fourth inning. I thought he was fine, and most like 90% of that was not his fault. But the fact that and I know this lineup is not the Red Sox lineup that you want to see in the postseason. Like there are guys that are missing, plenty of them, like over a third of the lineup that you would have hoped to be here is not. But it doesn't really make you feel any better or excuse what we saw tonight, because he came out there for 8 innings and one guy reached second base. He struck out 12. He absolutely dominated you. It's what Pat said. He turned them around and he had his way with them. Like,
wow.
It's just the way it was.
It's annoying too, because I felt like, maybe I'm giving the Red Sox too much credit, I felt like there was a game plan there, which was this guy walks a lot of dudes, like take pitches. And then he was just pouring it in. And there were so many 0-2 counts, tonight. It was like, you're so behind the eight ball. I feel like people who aren't deep in the analytics don't realize what happens when you have two strikes on you. It's just an all night long. When you're in a spot like that, it's just torture as a fan to watch. That felt like I was being executed as a fan very slowly, like tortured and then killed at the end. But the death was very slow and painful.
Yeah. Sammy, I agree. I think his numbers on the air, like he strikes guys out. The command is not what we saw tonight. And first off, it kills me to say it. Like you have to tip your cap. Like that was one of the best postseason outings I've ever seen. That kid was on one tonight, whatever. That being said, second, bare minimum, third time through the order, when you realize that he's not walking guys and he is on one, my brain, and I am not a major league hitting coach, I am not a major league baseball player, my brain cannot wrap around how a guy can throw 85% fastball sinker and guys still look surprised the third time through the lineup. it was great. The location was impeccable. He was painting high. He was putting it just off the plate. The location was great. But you have guys like Romy, Willier, Sadon, and Yoshida. Yoshida had a good game. He struck out on a ball that was at his forehead. Sadon did the same thing. Like, whatever game plan there was for Schlittler, whatever was going on tonight, obviously did not work. But it felt like there was no adjustment period. And they were so, so flat throughout the game. It was unbearable how bad the offense was.
Yeah. I mean, Cora on Schlittler, he just said we needed to be perfect because he was perfect. And it's the truth. And the Red Sox tonight, beyond what we saw at the plate, were far from perfect. I mean, that fourth inning for the Red Sox on defense was the equivalent of the Yankees in Game 5 of the World Series last year. What was it, the fifth inning, where Judge dropped the fly ball in center and then Garrett Cole didn't cover first base? Yeah, that's Sadon running circles to get to a pop-up in center field. Like, that's your the guy you want to be a platinum glove defender, taking a horrendous route to a ball that was in the air for like 10 minutes. And then Nate Lowe not fielding a ground ball that should have been an easy double play in the end, 2-run score off that play. Could have kept it a 2-0 game. Maybe that changes the way it went. Maybe if you're a 2-run deficit, the Red Sox can scrap something together. There's a little bit more hope. But now you're down 4-0, and with the way he was pitching, you just weren't going to make that up.
Sadon's non-catch that he took a very bad route to, like you said, 90% catch probability. So,
I mean, that's your guy. Like, that. This is that's what's so so frustrating about it is, like, if that's the guy you're supposed to be able to rely on to make those plays. Like, with if it were Jaron Duran in left field, he's been taking weird routes to balls for years. Like, you almost expect it. This is separate from the catch opportunity yesterday. Like, that was a catch that needed to be made 100 times out of 100. But you expect something like that from him, what Sadon did tonight. But, like, what we got on that play from Sadon, like, zero times that can happen from a guy who's supposed to be the captain of the defense, the dude who you've been seeing crazy plays from all year. Like, that should have been the easiest catch of his life. And I don't know what the hell happened. Like, the picture of the route is crazy. Joe?
Here's some of the reasons I'm thinking about. I'm thinking for a few reasons, like, obviously bad route and all that, but do you think it's because, I mean, they said it on radio, like Fleming, Middlebrooks, and Lou were saying, like, yeah, Abreu's been out and Abreu and Rafaela don't have that chemistry that they once did in the past. But I really think that play the other night where Willier basically cuts right in front of Sadon, that got into his head. And I ultimately think that Sadon in the back of his mind was thinking that Willier will go make this play because he's been ultra aggressive. And
85% catch probability for him on that one, by the way.
Right. So, like, I put that on both of them. Not that specific play, but the entire series of those two not being on the same page. Willier needs to understand that Sadon, the center fielder, is the captain of the outfield defense. And Sedan's got to put his head down and be that captain in center field. So that's ultimately what I think happened, is that Willier was too aggressive and Sadon let it get into his head.
Pat?
I kind of agree, not entirely. The first thing I saw, the second I saw that route, he broke like he was backing up Willier. I don't even think it was a bad route. I think it was a fucking awful read, and he was defaulting to Willier. And that's where I agree, Joe. I think he just kind of assumed Willier's going to do that. The thing that sucks is he hasn't done that all year. The way he broke on that ball, it's almost immediately toward right field. That picture makes me think he was going to back up Willier, which is so infuriating because, like you both just said, he is the best outfielder in baseball defensively. You are not the one to default to anybody. You are the one who calls that off. and it sucks that it happened tonight in the postseason. But the common theme with game three for me, honestly, was all of the ugly themes that occurred during the regular season rear their ugly head in the postseason.
You're right. You're so right, Pat.
It was horrendous defense. It was not putting the ball in play, not getting runners in scoring position in. Those were the big three. The bullpen was good all year. They were great in this series. The starting pitching, although it was not the starting pitching you had for 95% of the season, was, for the most part, I would say good. Crochet obviously was a horse. Bayo didn't have his stuff, but it wasn't like he got shellacked. Early got beat on some bad defense and soft contact. But those three things were common themes with every loss this year, and they came up in the postseason.
Yeah. I mean, you look at, I mean, obviously what Crochet did, there, not enough can be said about what he did in this series to make us feel what you're supposed to feel when your team gets to the postseason. And I mean, it truly, like, I cannot believe that they're not going to get to go to Fenway Park and give that man his due. Like, the fans should be able to salute what he did in game one at Yankee Stadium. And it sucks that that's just not going to get to happen. And then early, I thought, was really good tonight. And, you know, Bayo didn't really have his stuff. He hadn't had his stuff for a month. I don't know what the hell happened. But it was strikeouts, not coming through with runners in scoring position, not putting the ball in play. Just a lack of talent on offense, a lack of power on offense, that even if your team is healthy, that's a thing. Like, put Roman Anthony in this lineup, put Marcelo Meyer in the lineup. There's not enough power on this team. If Tristan Casas was the Tristan Casas you expected him to be this year, then, like, maybe, and if Devers was still on the team, you know, you have Casas, you have Devers, you have Story, you have Bregman, you have Anthony to hit the ball out of the ballpark. That's plenty of power. But
yeah,
Devers was traded. Casas isn't here. Who am I forgetting? Anthony's not here. So
Abreu's not himself either. Abreu's basically mid-rehab, like, in the playoffs, which
he was not himself at all. He was not himself from the second he came back.
No. Gordo, you and I disagreed about this, but we had, and Pat was obviously, I think you were in between, but we spoke about earlier in the year, is Seidan a luxury for a team with good offense, or is he just a good player? You have him no matter what. Regardless of where you fall on that spectrum, he was hitting fifth tonight in an elimination game. It's the talent, man. I agree with you. It's the talent. You had Nate Eaton hitting sixth, I think, both games one and two.
Yep.
Like, what do we do? Like, it's not an excuse, but, like, that's why I'm like, the more we talk about it, the more we discuss it, I'm like, all right, well, like, what did I expect? Look at this team.
Get smoother, brighter skin instantly in one easy step. Dermalogica's Daily Microfoliant gives you the smooth, glowy skin you want without damaging your skin barrier. This gentle exfoliating powder activates with water to smooth out rough texture and brighten skin. It's powerful enough to deliver results, yet gentle enough to use every single day, even on sensitive skin. See the results for yourself. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at cart for an exclusive free gift with $65 purchase.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
On the field, like I thought the Red Sox would win the game, would win the series in two games purely because of Crochet and Bayo. Crochet, check. Bayo didn't do his job. And then after that, you're like, well, shit, what do we do? Look at this lineup. You gonna hit? Like, you're not gonna hit your way to winning the series. You got to pitch your way, and you're out of pitchers. Giolito down too. That sucks. I know they didn't score tonight, so it's hard to use that as a not an excuse, but as a reason for the loss. But still, it's like it's just they fell apart down the stretch. An absurd amount of injuries. And Gordo, you had a great tweet about the pitching. The 11 guys who have been on the roster at some point as starting pitchers who were not available for one reason or another, a trade injury or what? Like, it's crazy. They just ran out of gas, and it's frustrating. But I think, and I'm not 100% sure, when I look back on this series months from now, that's just what I'll think. Like, good team, fun team. They ran out of gas. Like, what did I expect?
When did making plans get this complicated? It's time to streamline with WhatsApp, the secure messaging app that brings the whole group together. Use polls to settle dinner plans. Send event invites and pin messages so no one forgets mom's 60th. And never miss a meme or milestone. All protected with end-to-end encryption. It's time for WhatsApp. Message privately with everyone. Learn more at whatsapp.com.
This episode is brought to you by Jack Daniels. Jack Daniels and music are made for each other. They share a rhythm in the craft of making something timeless, while being a part of legendary nights. From backyard jams to sold-out arenas, there's a song in every toast. Please drink responsibly. Responsibility.org. Jack Daniels and Old No. 7 are registered trademarks. Tennessee Whiskey, 40% alcohol by volume. Jack Daniel Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee.
At Sierra, discover great deals on top-brand workout gear, like high-quality walking shoes, which might lead to another discovery.
40,000 steps, baby! Who's on top now, Karen?
You've taken the office step challenge a step too far. Don't worry, though. Sierra also has yoga gear. It might be a good place to find your zen. Discover top brands at unexpectedly low prices. Sierra, let's get moving.
So I want to make one point, and then I want to kind of not talk about something else, but bring something else up. I'm seeing way too many, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, fucking idiots blaming Cora for this series.
Oh my God. Don't even.
There are
stupid.
The last
so many
guy
people.
I would blame.
The other thing, too, and this is very unlike me historically, I would put no blame, maybe not no blame, but very little blame on John Henry and Craig Breslow, too. Breslow had an A-plus offseason. Henry okayed the Crochet contract. He okayed the Campbell contract. He okayed the Roman extension. He okayed the Bregman contract. He was greenlighting everything. Breslow had a phenomenal offseason. You could get mad at him for the trade deadline. Totally understandable. To blame this series on any of those three guys is blasphemous to me, considering what happened in season with all of the guys who were on the roster. Giolito got fucking hurt 3 days ago. Like, anyways, that was just my... Cora had an excellent managerial series. The second thing is there's one guy we have not brought up who we have to talk about. Jaren Duran was fucking useless for three straight games.
Yeah. Hold on. I want to go through these things one by one here. Parse through it. First, the back to Sammy's thing with the pitchers. I found the tweet. The pitchers that the Red Sox had starting games this year, or were they intended to have starting games this year and didn't, that were not available. Lucas Giolito, 1 Lucas Giolito, 2 Tanner Houck, 3 Cutter Crawford, 4 Hunter Dobbins, 5 Richard Fitz, 6 Dustin May, 7 Patrick Sandoval, 8 Cooper Criswell, 9 Walker Buehler, 10 Quinn Priester, 11 Sean Newcomb. And you're into guys that are starting the year in Double A and pitching 90%+ of the year in the minors.
You had a guy pitching with the bases loaded, Peyton Tolle, who started this season in Single A too. Like, crazy.
So that is how far into the pitching pipeline they had to reach. So, and that transitions into Pat's point about how do you like who's quote unquote to blame? Obviously, none of us are blaming Alex Cora. You're not going to hear that from us. I thought he managed a really good series for the most part. If you want to talk about Craig Breslow, the one thing that people killed him for, and rightfully so at the deadline, was that he didn't get enough pitching. But even with all of those dudes not available, that's not why they lost the series. Like the starting pitching depth did not lose them the series. They could have traded for Merrill Kelly, and he could have gone out there and thrown 7 scoreless innings, and the Red Sox would have lost this game, right? So why did they lose it? Like it's the bats, it's the defense, and the truth of the matter is, in the offseason, they acquired what they needed to. They created lanes for their rookies to come up and contribute, which they did. At the deadline, there was no opening for a bat besides first base. They didn't get a first baseman. We criticized them for that. But there wasn't a ton of great options for first base. The guy they got off of waivers or off of who was DFA'd and they signed, Nathaniel Lowe, that was about as good of an option for first base as they could have reasonably traded for. So you can't look at a moment in the offseason, a moment at the deadline and say, this is where the fuck up happened and that's why they lost. The truth is they're in year one of their window. We will talk probably shortly on this pod after the Durant stuff, because I agree we have to get there. But we're going to talk about the future. And the truth is this is year one for a lot of these dudes, a stepping stone year. And some guys are in the beginning of the ascent to where hopefully they will be. And a lot of guys got hurt. And that's the truth. And when you've got a lot of injuries and a lot of dudes at the beginning of their ascent, you're just not going to be talented enough to go against a team that's throwing Max Fried, Carlos Rodon, and the Cam Schlittler that we saw today. And then the lineup that the Yankees have with Aaron Judge in the middle, it was a tall task. And, they had a chance to win it anyway, but you got to play perfectly when you've got the talent deficiency compared to the opposition that they have or that they had in the series, and they didn't get it done.
I'll use this comparison that I've used in the past. It's not apples to apples, kind of like the 2022 Celtics, when it felt like they were early, they had a ton of talent. They're on the verge of being the team, but not quite there yet. They lose to the Warriors. And then, you look back when they do win the championship and you're like, wow, good thing they lost to the Warriors. That really helped. That certainly was like a boon for them. I think for guys like early, especially Tolley, even though it was brief, young guys, all the young guys up and down on the roster, even Abreu, who had never been in the playoffs really, but hadn't been in the playoffs before. Like this was big for him. Yeah, I thought for a second, I was like 2021. No, that was Renfro. But yeah, this is invaluable experience. And I know people don't want to hear that. And you can roll your eyes all you want, but it's true. And when the Red Sox are in the same spot again next year, we'll be thinking about, oh, good thing. I feel much better about these guys. They have playoff experience now. How big of a talking point is that going into a playoff series? X, Y, and Z don't have any experience. That's not good. I don't feel good about it because of that. And now, next year, when we're in this spot, now you've got that. So, not the perfect comparison. I just think it's not all negative.
Yeah. And I think especially for years moving forward, like experiences, good or bad, is always a positive thing. Early showed that he can really hold his own in a spotlight. It's his first time not pitching in a minor league stadium, literally. Early showed that he can hold his own. Narvaez, he had an okay series. The walks in game one were massive. He was great behind the plate. You had a lot of the young guys get good experience. And they got, really, all of the young guys, for the most part, showed that, aside from Sedan, showed that they're not just going to shit their pants. Like, they all had some form of promising moment in the series. Next year, Roman and Marcelo will get their first taste of it, but that you cross that bridge when you get there. Roman is the one I'm least concerned about. It's a step in the right direction.
That's my gripe, though. I do want to say, we talk about postseason experience. The experience, like there's two kind of schools of thought here, and there's the completing the job to get to the postseason, having the experience of getting through the season and having that success. And there's the experience of being in that environment and having to perform in that environment. And I thought it was great that Roman and Marcelo and a lot of the dudes that were hurt got to have that experience of celebrating getting to the postseason, because even though they didn't play down the stretch, like it's a long ass season for those dudes too. And I thought it was great that they got to be a part of that. I don't know. And I meant to talk about this on the pod before game one, but I don't know why you wouldn't have those guys come to New York and feel that atmosphere, that postseason atmosphere, be there for that. Because yeah, like you, a lot of guys on this team, like Abreu, Sadon, Bayo, like, yeah, Bayo only threw like what, 28 pitches, and Abreu only had like what, 5 at bats. Like, call it experience what you want, but whatever it was more than what Marcelo and Roman got. And I don't, to be honest with you, I don't know why they weren't there to get that experience.
Spin Zone, I can't think of two more low heartbeat guys that will just be able to like jump into postseason base, especially Roman. I feel like he could be bases loaded, like 2 outs, full count, bottom of the ninth inning, and be like, just another at bat.
You like to think so, but you don't know. You know, like, yeah, we're just guessing. Pat?
My thing with that is there's definitely pros to them being in New York. The other thing, too, is like you can't worry about the years down the road, like how much this is going to impact them years down the road. They're able to rehab 24/7 down in Florida. Marcelo would have been back for the DS. Roman probably the ALCS if they got there. You're just getting your ducks in a row for this year. Yeah, like hindsight's 2020. Like if you knew that you weren't getting out of the wild card, yeah, of course those guys should be up there. But in terms of your team this year, the best thing for them was to get full-time rehab and get ready to go when they can go. It sucks that next year they'll be kind of – I agree with Sammy. Those are two guys who are just so even keel. I'm not really worried about them under the spotlight. But there will be like the smallest of question marks next to them next year in the playoffs. How will these guys perform? Because you got a barometer on a lot of the guys this year. I mean, time will tell, but yeah, I don't know.
We'll get into some future talk, but I do want to get back to the point that Pat made. I think this might be the last thing we need to get into for the series before we kind of talk bigger picture moving forward. Yeah, Jaren Duran had a really, really bad series. And, you know, this is a guy who last year was leaps and bounds the best player on the team, stepped into a leadership role last year when, you know, Trevor Story got hurt. Devers didn't want to be the leader. You didn't have Bregman yet. And the only other vet on the team that was willing to have a voice was Rob Refsnyder, who's not an everyday player, and it's hard for those guys to be leaders. So Jaren Duran did what he did last year, both on and off the field, and it was an incredible season. This year was a step back on the field, but I thought another step forward in the leadership department. But that said, like that comes with being the dude that people are going to want to follow and expect. You know, I might not know what I'm doing here because I've only been in the bigs for a couple of months, but that guy is Jaren Duran. That's the All-Star Game MVP. That's the dude who got MVP votes last year. But that's a guy that I want to follow. I'm going to follow his lead. And he didn't come through offensively. He had the terrible play in the outfield in game 2 that really cost them. Maybe they win this series if he catches that ball off Judge's bat. I know it was tough matchups with lefties, but like when you're that dude on a team, you have to be better. And against lefties all year, he was not good enough. Like a 600 yeah. OPS. I'll see what the final number was, but when I last looked, it was a 600 OPS against lefties.
Yeah, the leading he did was leading the Yankees right to the ALDS. That was like, it couldn't have gone much worse, honestly. Like the drop ball, probably the worst of it. And then the offense was just a single. And that's it. Like not even like productive outs or no hard hit balls where you're like when they were playing the Diamondbacks and Duran was like 1 for 5, but we were both Gordo. We were looking at each other like, oh my God, he's hammering the ball. Yeah, he'll be fine. Nothing. He turned into a pumpkin. Like this is what like nightmares are made of for baseball players is what Jaren Duran did. So I don't know if he's, you got the numbers?
Yeah, I got it. So he is 600 OPS against lefties on the year and in the series. 91 batting average, which I believe is 1 for 11. He had a 258 OPS in the series.
What? Wait, what?
He had a 258 OPS in the series. These 3 games, but 258 OPS.
Jesus Christ, dude.
Struck out twice today. And then
I think the thing that bugs me is when he strikes out, the strikeouts look so feeble. Like they look like he's whatever, man. I think that's it for Duran in Boston. I'm sure we're going to talk about that a ton over the winter, but I'm put it out there right now. I think that was it. I think that's the end of his time with the Red Sox.
Pat?
Yeah. Yeah. So my thing with Jaron, it was just highlighted in the postseason, but kind of coming off of last year's incredible year, pretty much everything he excelled at last year, he really, truly just regressed to the mean. In the stuff that he was average at, he became bad at. It was a regression across the board in every facet of his game. For a guy who's known for his speed, he didn't steal a ton of bags. He hit two sub-70. The defense is still horrific. Pretty much the only reason you didn't move him in the offseason was because of last year and what he did that helped this team get energized, and he was dangerous on the base paths. The defense was good enough. Like, year as a whole was a letdown. The postseason was, Sammy, you kind of said it, but the strikeouts are the most non-competitive at-bats I have seen in a long time. He has the same swing for every single pitch. There's no adjustment in his game at the plate. Defensively, he drops fly balls. He takes absolute shit routes and gets lucky with his athleticism to make these kind of weird twisting plays. We didn't even talk about this. How the fuck did he not throw out Giancarlo Stanton in second base?
Yeah, that's true. When Stan was standing around there and that ball went off the wall, when I figured out he was trying for second, I thought he was going to be absolutely cooked. I don't know what the hell happened there. Well,
you see the replay? Duran was, I mean,
moseyed.
Yeah.
Just moseyed over.
It's not the like
ball
the
took
most
a weird hop off the wall. It kind of maybe looked like he was expecting it to jump right back to him, but it hit the sort of mat and popped straight up into the air. So maybe that's what it was, but still, like, I mean, he was literally yelling, turning towards the dugout and yelling at them. Like, we had a Stantonian single. We had the moment right there. Like that, we would have looked at that for years if the Red Sox had won this game.
What my kind of like last personal thing on Duran is one other thing that became abundantly clear for me this year in regards to Jaron Duran. In every single opportunity he had to be man or mouse, Jaron Duran was mouse. I cannot recollect one true moment this season where there was a true clutch situation,
Gotta give him that. I agree. He had a letdown season compared to, I think, what fans could reasonably expect. I know most of the stat outlets like FanGraphs, everything was projecting a regression. But like when he produces what he produced last year, there's an expectation that comes from the fan base. And yeah, he underperformed that. I still think he was a productive player for this team, and he had a solid season when compared to your average player. When you compare it to the expectations, it was a letdown. I don't think Jaron Duran is a bad player, but it goes back to what Sammy said before. You think about like what is this outfield going to be moving forward. To me, the best iteration of this Red Sox team is Anthony in left, Rafaela in center, Abreu in right, and the Red Sox get like an actual, real, middle-of-the-order bat DH, someone that can get the shit out of the ball.
Yes.
Like, yes. Someone that is feared in the middle of the lineup. You don't need to give a fuck about the defense. Fuck the stupid rotating in and out. Get the best hitter you can get to be your DH next year. And those three are the outfielders. And yeah, that means someone's going to have to be the odd man out. And I think that there are players on this team, outfielders on this team with more value than Jaron Duran that you could get more for. But in terms of the fit moving forward, the age, how I expect these guys to progress in the years to come. Yeah. I think the odd man out probably is Jaron Duran.
Yeah. I think he's obviously the odd man out, and he's a good player. I mean, I wouldn't even say it's a question. He hit 4.6 WAR, 24 bags, 114 OPS plus. Like, it's a very good player. He's not great. He led the league in triples, 13 triples, along with 41 doubles, kind of buried the lead there. Yeah. Good player. It's just like, he's not what the Red Sox need. The Red Sox need, in my opinion, a right-handed bat with power in the middle of the lineup to go in between. Right now you have Bregman, Story, and those are your two big righties. And like,
maybe.
Yeah. Hey, maybe you don't. Yeah.
Or neither. Like, we don't know.
Oh my God. I think Bregman is definitely coming back, and Story, I'm pretty positive with him too, but you know, you never know. So I think that's what they need. Right-handed bat. There's a few of them on the free agent market, but yeah, that's what they should replace Duran with.
My other thing too, just in terms of like schematics wise, how Jaren fits in. This is a team that I forget what the exact number was, but I believe they ranked 8th in baseball in home runs when they had Raffy Devers. Once Raffy was moved, they ranked 23rd in the majors in home runs. You can recreate pretty much what Jaren does in the aggregate and with guys like Roman does a little bit of this, Marcelo this. Like, there's ways to make up for the stolen bases, the extra base hits, all this stuff. You cannot create power when there is no power. And I'm meaning strictly like home run translations. This is a team that desperately needs power. There's enough guys who can do enough of what Jaren does to make his lack of presence relatively unknown. They can make up for it. What they cannot make up for is the true lack of power in the middle of this lineup. Like, there's too many things they need to, I don't want to say waste an everyday spot, but kind of waste an everyday spot on Jaren Duran when you have so many other really good options.
Yeah. And the other thing, one of the guys that had a really good series, and he's taken a lot of heat on this podcast, is Masataka Yoshida. He 4-for-7 in the series, had the huge hit in game one. He was him and Trevor Story were the two bats you could count on in the series. But it goes to what Pat just said. Pat, what did you say, 23rd in homers after Devers got traded?
Yeah.
So I appreciate what Masataka Yoshida got, like where he got by the end of the season. He was their hottest hitter down the stretch. He figured something out. But in terms of what this team needs, they've got guys that, like, Romy Gonzalez hit over 300. Like, Roman Anthony, after, I don't know if he hit over 300. I don't think he did in total, but certainly after his first week and a half or whatever, hit over 300. Like, Bregman's going to hit close to 300. You've got guys that can get hits. You don't have enough guys that put the ball over the fence. And, you know, obviously Tristan Casas coming back and being who we think he could be would be a huge boost to that. But with his injury and with the amount of time that he's missed, even me as like one of the bigger Tristan Casas truthers, you can't count on that. There's like, you can't go into next season saying Casas and Anthony will come back and Willier Abreu will have his swing. And that's going to be our power. Like, you've got to make something happen. Because right now there's just zero margin for error. And it's that situation like we went into with the past few years with the rotation, where it's like, if everything goes right, then it can work. Like, you need to allow for error, which is what they did this year with the starting rotation. It's what got them to the playoffs. You need to do it next year with the offense.
Yeah, I agree. And balance it out too. Can't have the 2024 thing where everyone's left-handed and you can't hit left-handed pitching. Because right now, a lot of the guys who are projected to make the roster, and it's a different group than what you just saw, but are left-handed. So, and we're about to talk about Bregman, who's one of your right-handed guys. So you got a lot of work to do if you're Craig O.
Pat?
Before we get to Bregman, one thing too is they're in a really good spot to shore up, to kind of fill the holes they have. They have, I counted out earlier in the day, I think they have like 11 realistic options for rotation spots next year. None of them are number twos. You need a number two desperately. But like, they have surplus in a lot of different places. You can fill the power bat, the right-handed bat, the number two. They're able to do it without like handicapping themselves, really. They're in a really good spot. It's all a matter of, do they do it?
I mean, in terms of the overall future of the organization, like, yeah, they're in a great spot. Like, they've got tons of good starting pitchers. Maybe, like what you said, Pat, they don't necessarily have the number two, but you've got the ammo to go get it. Like, you've got a lot of stuff coming in the minor leagues. There's free agent starting pitchers. I kind of like the idea of trading for one, but you've got plenty of bats. Like, you saw it at points in time during this year, like particularly when Sadon was swinging the bat, where you felt, wow, like, 1 through 9, you feel pretty good about everybody. And then you realize that Toro wasn't really hitting the ball well, but it's like, okay, if we're moving forward, like, hopefully you'll feel good about Casas in that spot. Christian Campbell hopefully will find his way somewhere in this lineup. Like, that's a conversation we'll probably have a million times in the offseason, probably not a conversation for today. But yeah, Sammy, you said it. The next thing we should get to is Alex Bregman. Question for you guys bluntly. Like, he took that walk in the last inning, and I tweeted out like something along the lines of like, yeah, you don't, we don't know. Like, could that be the last Alex Bregman plate appearance in a Red Sox uniform? And he said after the game that he absolutely could see himself coming back. I expect him to be back. I'm going to have to do a deep dive on whether I think he's going to opt out or not. Right now I kind of lean towards he's going to opt in, but I've really got to go take a look and deep dive when I'm ready for it. Cause I'm not ready to deep dive in the off season, but just, is Alex Bregman back? And if you think he's going to be back, do you think it's because he opts in, or do you think it's because he signs a different contract?
Tough call on whether he opts in, opts out, and signs a different contract. But I think, like, I'm like 90% sure that Alex Bregman's going to be back with the Red Sox next year. It seems like he genuinely wants to play for the Red Sox. Like, he has family ties to the team. He's kind of always been enamored with Fenway and the mystique of the team and the franchise. So, if I had to guess right now, I think he does opt out. Joe likes to point out Scott Boris. He's a big opt-out guy, can always get more. But that said, if there was ever a scenario where I could see him being like, hey, you want to give it another whirl? You're $40 million next year. Why not? Could see that happening. But right now I'm leaning towards, I think he'll opt out. It's just more like what we've seen in the past.
Yeah, I would agree. I think there's, I would say 80. I think 80% chance Bregman's back.
Get smoother, brighter skin instantly in one easy step. Dermalogica's Daily Microfoliant gives you the smooth, glowy skin you want without damaging your skin barrier. This gentle exfoliating powder activates with water to smooth out rough texture and brighten skin. It's powerful enough to deliver results, yet gentle enough to use every single day, even on sensitive skin. See the results for yourself. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at cart for an exclusive free gift with $65 purchase.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly,
you know,
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland,
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Do think that he probably opts out. One thing that I think is, like, I don't even want to say like a common misconception, but one thing that I don't think is even remotely true is that if he opts out, you're giving him a raise. He's not getting more than $40 million a year.
It'd be like more total, but like, yeah, not more.
It would be net value. Like, I could see like a five-year 140, like something in like the high 28 range. That being said, though, I think he's absolutely open. Earlier in the season, up until like around the All-Star break-ish, I want to say, like, he was like all gung-ho. He's like, yeah, like, I want to be here. I'll sign something. And then once you get to like the second half, it's, you know, don't show your cards kind of thing. But no, Sammy, I agree. It's everything he said, everything he's done. He wants to be here. And even if you go back to like his free agent meetings, like, he's asking about team's prospects. He's asking about the future of the team. If you're doing stuff like that, the chances of you envisioning yourself being at that place for 1 year, I just don't see it. I think there's a lot of long-term investment in him, not in his current deal. I think he takes something, and I think he's absolutely back next year.
And he can see what we can see. Like, yes, like, we want, when the season started, we had much bigger aspirations than a wild card series defeat to the New York Yankees. That's for sure. But there were so many, like, the things that we needed to see, like, for, like, to Roman Anthony alone, like, that development is enough to make you excited about the future, whether you're a fan of the team or whether you're a player on the team. And Bregman had been saying it since day one, how impressed he's been with some of the young dudes on this team. And now to see some of the pitchers putting it together, not just in the minors, but showing it in the majors too. Like, yeah, I expect him to be back. It's going to be potentially a turbulent process to get that to that point, but I expect him to be back and hopefully with a little bit more certainty than a year-to-year thing, so we don't have to go through this whole song and dance again, and it can just, he's going to be here. He's going to be the guy that helps these dudes transition to the big leagues, and then by the time his play declines as he ages, those dudes will be good enough to carry him.
Upgrade your laundry routine with a durable and reliable Maytag laundry pair at Lowe's. Like the new Maytag washer and dryer with performance-enhanced stain-fighting power designed to cut through serious dirt and grime. And what's great is this laundry pair is in stock and ready for delivery when you need it the most. Don't miss out. Shop Maytag in-store or online today at Lowe's.
My next question for you guys, this is something, Pat, you brought up on the last show, but I hushed you because I didn't want to get there yet. But now it's time to get there. Was the season a success?
You asking me? Am I going first? I'll go first.
Go for it.
No. No. Success to me ends with a trophy. Step in the right direction? Yes. Solid season? Yes. Successful? No.
Pat, can I ask you a follow-up? Was 2016 a successful season to you?
No, it was a step in the right direction.
But not a successful season?
No.
I think it's fair. I was curious because I kind of view this season similarly to that one.
2016?
That's
why?
My thing. It's like,
because that was 16? Their
first division title.
Because that was, I mean, yeah, they didn't win the division this year, but it was their first time back in the playoffs after a few years. And like, you saw the breakouts from the kids. Like, that was the first season where you could view the next title team sort of coming together.
See, I think of that season as Big Poppy's last season. That's why I was confused.
Oh, okay. Like, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was both. You're right. Like, it was both.
Yeah. That's my sentiment though. Like, step in the right direction. Like, 16 and 17 were very good stepping stones. They weren't successful. I feel the same way about the 2025 team. Good season, yes. Stepping stone, right direction, encouraging, yes, yes, yes. Successful, no.
Sammy, success? No.
So I agree the goal is to win a championship. Obviously, everyone wants to win the championship. That's the reason you play. However, I don't think it's as simple as 2024, not a success. 2025, not a success. I think that it's a multiple season long process to win a World Series. And that's kind of why I had that Celtics comp earlier in the episode when I said it feels like a team that is, you know, young, maybe they're in the playoffs, but they're overmatched, but they get the experience and you could see the future is bright. You could even use that with the even younger Celtics teams when they played LeBron. Like, you get it. Like, it's
that's
a young
where I
team.
Would compare them to. That's my
either way.
I think it's kind of like the Celtics team that lost Kyrie and Hayward, but still made a run. Like, that's and then you
even
go
better
the next year. It's like, oh, like when those guys come back, what could it look like? And then it didn't look good, but like you're not at that point. You're hopefully it won't be like that.
Same concept, but the point is, winning the World Series is obviously the goal. I just think of it more as a multiple season process. And if you can take a full season and say, yes, this entire year was a step in the right direction towards winning that World Series, and we feel really good about our chances to win the World Series in the years to come, then yeah, I think it's a success. Is it a rousing success that I'm going to talk about every single day for the rest of my life, like 2004 or like 2018? No, but it's a success on a smaller level because it got them closer to winning the World Series. And I think that when we look back on the 2025 Red Sox, it's going to be a lot more positive than negative. So, yes, I do think overall, despite the sad ending, you have to look at it as a success.
Yeah, the way I look at the season is kind of two separate things. There's the preseason / spring training expectations where we were all sitting there looking at the crappy AL field and how good the Red Sox roster looked like it was going to be and all the things that could go right and how good they could be. And then there's the, when they traded Devers, what that team looked like at that moment. I would say if we're going based off of preseason, I would say this is like the bare minimum of what we needed to do. And in that sense, it's like you accomplished the goal, but the word success maybe feels a little bit strong in terms of where they were when they traded Devers. I mean, at that point, you got to remember, like, we sat right here and we talked on this podcast and we feared that we were going to have another one of those seasons where the season's over before you get to September. And all we were just, oh my God, play meaningful September baseball, play meaningful September baseball, like make us feel something. And this team did that and more because, yeah, we felt something all through the month of September. Those games had us on the edge of our seats. We wanted to see them make the playoffs, and they made the playoffs, and they deserved to celebrate, and I'm glad they did. To me, like that is a success considering where they were. But it's like Sammy said, it's a multi-step process. Like, yeah, if this happens again next year, they get to the playoffs and they're a wild card team and they instantly flame out right when they get there, it's not going to be a success. But this is step one, and hopefully there's another step in the future. Like in 16, they made the playoffs. That was a success for that team. But next year when they made the playoffs and lost in the division series again, it cost John Farrell his job. So I'm not saying if they get to the playoffs next year and flame out, that it's going to cost Alex Cora his job, but I'm just saying every year the bar gets raised a little bit. This team hadn't made the playoffs three consecutive seasons. They needed to check that box, and they did. And yeah, I'm crushed right now, and like I keep thinking about how we're going to wake up tomorrow, the day after, the day after, and the day after, and the day after, and the day after that, and the Red Sox are not going to be playing any of those days. But when we look back on this season, I'm hoping that it will be the first step of hopefully not a long process to get back to that point where this team's a perennial title contender. It sucks that it can't happen all at once. Some teams, maybe it does happen all at once, but usually there are steps to these things. I'm a believer in those stepping stones, and hopefully this is the first of those. Sammy, you're muted.
Sorry, I'm dying over here. My voice is just like gonzo. I've been going every 2 seconds. I think it is going to be the step that we look back on, and we're like a year from now when the Red Sox are, you know, in like the ALDS or the ALCS, we'll be like, remember when they lost the Yankees and we were like, there's a silver lining, and we were kind of, you know, nauseous even saying that, but we were right. I think that's what we'll look back on it like, just to be a little positive at the end of this sad, sad pod.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is, like, in the end, we're crushed right now, but when we're sitting here and like, we're not going to still be devastated crying over this shit in December, January, you know, we're going to be talking about moving forward and some of the dudes that took big steps forward this year and dudes that hopefully we expect more from next year. Is there anything else that you guys, like, I'm trying to think if there's anything we missed before we kind of put a bow on everything.
Nah, we can, we'll have more discussions about this team. It's kind of hard to talk about this team at this hour, at this kind of in this scenario. It's very raw. Like, there's so many things I want to talk about, but in my head I'm like, no, you need to sit on this. You need to think, like, what, like, how do you really feel about this team? And I want to talk with you guys about our like predictions and see how we did and do an episode about that. And I feel like that would probably be the time for a lot of those conversations. But right now, those are all the thoughts. That's all the voice I have left. I'm sure everyone can hear my voice is fading. I'm going to go drink a lot of tea, recover, but that's all I got.
Pat?
As you guys know, I, for the most part, when I'm right, I fucking hate it because it's never anything good. The Casas injury, Connelly Early, not Connelly Early, Hunter Dobbins. It's always the weird shit. I hate being right. I've never hated anything more than me saying not seeing Cam Schlittler, the regular season would come back and haunt them, calling that they would win game one, lose games two and three, and then last episode voicing my concern about the guys who did not play every day games one and two.
Yeah, no, it's 100% true. I after game one, I was so excited, but it, like, I think I said it on the pod. I'm sure I said it at some point, but I was like, I'm thrilled right now, but at the same time, like, Pat and I sat here and said they'll win game one and then lose games two and three. So technically it's going according to the script, so we can't get ahead of ourselves. But when you're up one to nothing in a three game series, like, you can't help but naturally get a little bit ahead of yourself.
Yeah. Yep.
Last thought on this before we put a bow on it. I'm also thinking back to something Sammy said when Roman went down, and it's just like, you don't want to end the season without seeing him play again. And it's like, they didn't even get close. And they probably could have gone to game seven of the World Series. He wouldn't have made it back. But it just sucks that we got to see how good that fucking kid is. And it's just taken away from you like that. And you never saw him again. Pat?
Nothing that we really need to talk about. More just kind of little nuggets trickling in. Alex Bregman was basically in tears. Said it was an honor to wear the Red Sox uniform. Only thinking about the game. Nothing else. He's proud of everybody. And then he sat in his locker until 11:30 in full uniform. He was the last one there. And then one last nugget, just because both are relevant. Story on his impending opt-out. This is from Cotillo. Not at the top of my mind. I'm not going to speak on that right now, but I came here to be here for a long time. So,
yeah, we'll have a lot of conversations about where we think those things are going to go. I'll have to read up on those deadlines when we're going to have to hear decisions on Bregman's player options, Story's opt out. Those dates are set in stone somewhere, but I just haven't gotten that far yet. Do we want to anything else before we put a bow on this thing?
No, I'm looking forward to Roman Anthony being the first batter of the season for the Red Sox next year.
Yeah.
My last thing is just go Blue Jays.
Yeah, true that. Well, I want to take a second at the end of this thing. Just first off, like, I just have a lot of gratitude for so many people. Like, first of all, for you guys, because we couldn't do this shit without any of you, Sammy, Pat, Joe, three of you guys. We grind and we love doing it, but like it is a grind. We love it, but it is a grind. I want to shout out Joe because Joe, he's in the back, but that dude produced every single episode of this podcast this year. And the wheels don't turn without what he does. He produces the videos. He's in the back. The podcast cannot like begin it. Like if Joe isn't here to produce the podcast, there isn't a podcast. None of us have that. So the fact that Joe was here for 100% of the podcast this year, Joe, I'm really appreciative of that from you. Like that, it goes a long way to making this podcast the success that it's been. And I appreciate that. But Sammy and Pat, like you guys being on this show, doing it with you guys, like I feel like we've come a really long way doing this. I think it's gotten so like we could go back and listen to the early iterations of this shit when we had no idea what we were doing, kind of thrown into the fire. But I really feel like we know what we're doing now. And this could not be the same show without you guys. Like when we have a pod and it's just two of us, it's not the same feel as when all three of us are here. Like you guys are so important to what makes this podcast really good, in my opinion. And just, I'm thankful that I get to do this with the three of you guys. And I'm really thankful for anyone who listens to the show, like anyone who tunes in, whether you listen to all the episodes, whether you listen to one episode a month, whether you only listen to the episodes when they're in the playoffs and when they traded Devers, like it doesn't matter. The fact that you care enough about what we have to say to put us on, even if it's just for 5 minutes and then you shut it off, like I think that's super cool. And I'm thankful for all of the people who listen, and just another shout out for Bradfo for getting us to this point. It was 2 years ago that he put us in this position to have this podcast, and he launched us, and we are nowhere as a group without him and the contributions he's made, not just to put us in a position where we have opportunities, but to also make us better at this, doing the radio on Saturdays. Like, again, like I said, like we are miles better at this than we were when we started. Go back and listen to the early iterations of this podcast. Like,
no, it's don't.
A different experience.
Woof. don't.
So yeah, just, I'm fucking crushed. Like the Red Sox got eliminated, an hour and a half ago at this point. But in the end, like we get to do something that is super, super cool. And what we get to do isn't remotely possible without any of you guys, without the listeners, without Bradfo. Like I'm forever grateful that we get to do this.
Amen. beautifully said. I would give you a response, but I'm like losing the ability to talk. So I'll do a nice thing on our next episode.
You're grinding till the end.
Yeah, Gordon, I'll follow you. What a great exit. It's kind of like, it's funny because it feels like the end of every Red Sox season is like, this podcast is a TV show. Like, it's the end of like a season of a show. Yeah, man, it's fucking awesome what we get to do. We've created a really cool kind of like brainchild. For the most part, the four of us, we're always on the same kind of wavelength, same ideas, same kind of creative juices flowing, same ideas. We all get along great. I have so much fun doing this. I know you guys do too. Joe, depending on how late you record, I know you have fun too.
Sorry, but no, Joe.
Dude, we like the shit that we get to do and the volume that we do it, the size that we get to do it, the perks that we have to do what we do it's awesome. And everybody who listens and interacts on Twitter, whether you follow us on Twitter, tweet at us, listen to the podcast, just see our TikTok, see us on Twitter, whatever it is. It's so cool. I appreciate every single person who has literally ever listened to this podcast. It's the best feeling in the world knowing that like people are just as sick and twisted as we are when it comes to caring about Red Sox baseball. And Gordo, really quick, last thing for me. Yes, this show is not a show without Joe Braverman. Everything you see on socials, all the podcasts you hear, the YouTube, everything is from Joe Braverman's mind, computer, everything. And just to put into kind of give you a reference, we are recording at, it is 12:20 a.m. on Friday morning. When everybody wakes up to drive to work tomorrow, there will be a graphic on Twitter and a video cooked up for probably early afternoon, late morning. And that is done between now and then. And that is all Joe Braverman. So shout out, Joe. We appreciate you. We love you. You're the best.
Yeah, Joe, you're the man. You're the MVP of the show. Goes without saying. And last thing I want to say about our group is this is only the beginning. We're not even close to done.
Yes.
So as sad as we are, and as painful as my voice sounds right now, and how painful as my throat feels right now, we're going to keep gutting it out. And we've got a lot more fun stuff coming. It'll be a fun off season, and then 2026. Oh, boy.
Woo! And because I've got a long night ahead of me, I'll make mine short and say it's worth the 3 a.m., 4 a.m. long nights of editing.
We feel bad about it, Joe. I promise you. I think about it all the time. I'm like, oh, I'm tired, but Joe must be.
Nah, who needs sleep anyway when you got the slucks?
Yeah, well, we don't have this.
Whenever I don't get a good night's sleep, I always say I don't run on sleep, I run on heart. I hope you run on heart, Joe.
Whoa, that's deep.
That is really deep. That's how we're going to end it. Okay. All right, get us out of here, Gordon.
I'm so sad. Because, like, yeah, I know we're going to keep, we're obviously going to keep, I don't know, we haven't even had a discussion amongst the four of us about, because last year we took a couple weeks off at some point. I'm sure we'll do it again, but we haven't, I don't know when that's going to be. Like, we'll figure out how exactly we're going to approach, because I mean, we were all hoping there was going to be episodes after all the playoff games for a deep run. So we'll talk about what the immediate future of the show is going to be. Pat?
Just eyeballing the calendar. Just spitballing, but most likely 166 days, so we're down at Fort Myers. So there's that.
That's so fucking long. That's daunting. That's my least favorite part about the end of a season like this, is just thinking about how many fucking days we now have to wait to watch meaningful Red Sox baseball again. I'll say it a million times. But yeah, we'll keep you guys, the listeners, in the loop. I'm sure this won't be our last episode before any sort of break, because I'm sure they're going to do like end of season press conferences, whatever, and like things will be said and we'll talk about them. We'll talk about season predictions and just like the overall season in review for guys. Like we didn't talk about like enough about Garrett Crochet and Roman Anthony's season. Like, we talked about the season. So we'll get to those things, and then maybe we'll have a little bit better of an idea for next show, and we'll keep you guys in the loop on that. But again, thank you to everybody. We'll probably put a bow on it there. That's going to be episode 273 of Play Tessie. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Remember to subscribe, rate 5 stars. Check us out on YouTube, on WEI's channel. Hit the thumbs up on all the videos in the Play Tessie playlist and subscribe to WEI. And then find us on the socials at Play Tessie on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. That is going to do it for Play Tessie for the 2025 Red Sox season. I can't believe it's over. This is the worst day of the year. It sucks. Cannot believe the Yankees beat the Red Sox and eliminated them. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.
Get smoother, brighter skin instantly in one easy step. Dermalogica's Daily Microfoliant gives you the smooth, glowy skin you want without damaging your skin barrier. This gentle exfoliating powder activates with water to smooth out rough texture and brighten skin. It's powerful enough to deliver results, yet gentle enough to use every single day, even on sensitive skin. See the results for yourself. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at cart for an exclusive free gift with $65 purchase.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of
Browns. You know
Browns
why fans. It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.